I'd want some peace and quiet, if it were me, she said. I'd love some, he replied. I'll distract them all, she said. Use your cloak. And before he could say a word, she had cried, Oh, look, a blibbering humdinger, and pointed out of the window. Everyone who heard looked around, and Harry slid the cloak up over himself and got to his feet. Now he could move through the hall without interference. He spotted Ginny two tables away. She was sitting with her head on her mother's shoulder. There would be time to talk later. Hours and days, and maybe years in which to talk. He saw Neville, the sword of Gryffindor, lying beside his plate as he ate, surrounded by a knot of fervent admirers. Along the aisle, between the tables, he walked, and he spotted the three Malfoys huddled together as though unsure whether or not they were supposed to be there. But nobody was paying them any attention. Everywhere he looked, he saw families reunited. And finally, he saw the two whose company he craved most. It's me, he muttered, crouching down between them. Will you come with me? They stood up at once, and together he, Ron, and Hermione left the great hall. Great chunks were missing from the marble staircase, part of the balustrade gone, and rubble and bloodstains occurred every few steps as they climbed. Somewhere in the distance, they could hear Peeves zooming through the corridors, singing a victory song of his own composition.
We did it! We bashed them! We Potters, the one! And Voldy's gone mouldy! So now let's have fun!
Really gives a feeling for the scope and tragedy of the thing, doesn't it? Said Ron, pushing open a door to let Harry and Hermione through. Happiness would come, Harry thought, but at the moment it was muffled by exhaustion. And the pain of losing Fred and Lupin and Tonks pierced him like a physical wound every few steps. Most of all, he felt the most stupendous relief and a longing to sleep. But first, he owed an explanation to Ron and Hermione, who had stuck with him for so long and who deserved the truth. Painstakingly, he recounted what he had seen in the Pensieve and what had happened in the forest. And they had not even begun to express all their shock and amazement when at last they arrived at the place to which they had been walking, though none of them had mentioned their destination. Since he had last seen it, the gargoyle guarding the entrance to the headmaster's study had been knocked aside. It stood lopsided, looking a little punch-drunk, and Harry wondered whether it would be able to distinguish passwords anymore. Can we go up? He asked the gargoyle.
Feel free, groaned the statue.
They clambered over him and onto the spiral stone staircase that moved slowly upward like an escalator. Harry pushed open the door at the top. He had one brief glimpse of the stone Pensieve on the desk where he had left it, and then an ear-splitting noise made him cry out, thinking of curses and returning Death Eaters and the rebirth of Voldemort. But it was applause. All around the walls, the headmasters and headmistresses of Hogwarts were giving him a standing ovation. They waved their hats, and in some cases their wigs. They reached through their frames to grip each other's hands. They danced up and down on the chairs in which they had been painted. Dilys Derwent sobbed unashamedly. Dexter Fortescue was waving his ear trumpet, and Phineas Nigellus called in his high, reedy voice,
And let it be noted that Slytherin House played its part. Let our contribution not be forgotten.